I went into this whole thing with Tim and somebody and I. I said, you know, I talked to you a little about the Congress, how we're going to deal with it and so forth. I said, you know, it's a good question. We have to keep the public in this. It's not the end of the night. Governor, I'm going to meet with that area. I said, it's time now that we recognize that it is not the responsibility of the president to try to win the, particularly his own Republicans in the Congress, his own Republicans. It's time for them to try to win. And which is of course is the total philosophy of the Eisenhower House, the total philosophy. And so it is with the governors and the rest. I think that we subconsciously, Bob, have been, I think we've been too much over the past 4 years in a position where we are just saying, when the president's got to do this, he's got to do this for the blacks, to win the blacks, or he's got to do this to prove he's not mad at the press, or he's got to go to the Truman Memorial to prove he's a good sport. I don't have to do a goddamn thing like that anymore. You agree? Yep. I do what I should do. And do the right things. And I'm going to do it my own way. I feel that, and don't you agree though, there is a problem that our own people have got to be everything. Now, this isn't a question of being arrogant. It has nothing to do with that, right? We're not a goddamn bit arrogant. We see people of all walks of life. But we've got to do it on our terms. And we can't have the feeling that as if we can't act as if maybe we've done something wrong. And so now we've got to go win back the Republicans. Win, why win? Because they were hurt that they aren't consulted more often? Huh? Or why? That they weren't in the White House more often? Because we had more dinner for them? What do you do, huh?
No.
Are you even able to give that a little thought, that whole point of, oh yeah, I just think that's a terribly important thing.
I think you're absolutely right on it. I think we've got to...
I don't want to get into this arrogant business.
No, not at all.
It's, well, that is the question as a matter of fact. How do you have anything? I'm the least arrogant guy that's been in this office.
Yeah. That's right.
And that's bad, too.
It is, in a way.
You're right.
In some ways, you haven't been arrogant. Arrogant's not the right word.
Well,
you don't want to be arrogant, but you haven't been aloof enough.
That's right.
In the sense of
I've had two damn nice people when they have kept us around.
That's right. That's right.
A little bit more forward. Let's take, for example, the attitude of the news last night. From the time of Joe McCarthy, he said, we're a one guy. He totally cut him off the socialists in the White House, and he was never in the White House. He only took 100. He never had a general in the White House because Gunner attacked Gunner Marsh. And he never had Truman in the White House in 8 years because Truman had said something nasty about it. That was right, the Eisenhower, the great, the unifier. What do we do?
You have
we have John,
you have Hubert Humphrey, and
Hubert Humphrey, well, call it beyond that, for Christ's sake. We have John Gardner.
Yeah.
We have
Joy Wilkins. You gave a great big dinner for John Gardner, for his urban coalition, whatever the hell that thing was.
But it's always on the basis that
give a toast to John Gardner.
We have to go over and do a do this in order to demonstrate that I don't wear horns. Now that's, we just can't do that anymore. Well, that's my point.
Well, and I think that's the chairman's process.
That gets to the point. I don't know whether you've got this straight, and I think it's for the Ehrlichman problem.
I shot the Schultz problem. I shot that memorandum that you wrote. I rewrote it. I told you I was going to rewrite that one, you know, you covered on the reaction to the election, the Republican reaction, and the question of pardoning the president and all that. I rewrote it as a, not coming from you, and Senator Buchanan asked for his comments on it. And he said, I concur with several of the points in that memorandum. As we predicted, the president is getting negative treatment for not helping GOP candidates enough. That was to be expected, given our strategy of running as president in the White House. Our strategy, frankly, was the right one. The criticism was bound to come up, but the criticism is unfair, inevitable though it may be. If RN sweeps the state by 60 or 65% of the vote, and then the incumbent, whether he's Allen or Miller, goes down the tubes, that's their fault, not the president's fault. Though you will never convince them of that, so there's no point trying. Second, we live in the age of the ticket splitter. And when Nixon carries Alabama by some incredible total, and then Sparkman does the same thing against a Nixon Republican, what the hell are we supposed to do to save Red Blind? There's no way. And he says, the president strategy was right for himself, and it was right for the party. His political assignment was to win in a landslide, and he did it. We should do the best we can to heal any wounds. We could probably have done better in turning some dough over to our people, maybe, or something like that.
Well, no, dough isn't the thing.
Correct that fact.
100,000, correct. They all had surpluses.
But he says, but Kennedy, I don't think the charges are justified. One recalls, and this is a good point, that in 70, Nick Farnan and the vice president barnstormed across the country for them. And then when they didn't win, they bitched their head off, too. So let's face facts. When we win huge and they don't win at all, there are going to be recriminations, and we just have to live with it. That's there. The other point that the history books will get across, although the media doesn't today, is to point up repeatedly. He says, we can make an effort on this. The enormous odds against which the president has been battling for a quarter century, and which he has survived, the amount of political record matched only by FDR and anyone. And this is something we should work on. And he's right. I mean, that's the pitch we ought to be pushing, not justifying ourselves against the goddamn Republican senators.
Right.
Then he says, kind of interesting, he says, that's for the dominant point of the memorandum. I simply don't accept it.
True.
The dominant point. That we're not given credit for having heart, for being warm and human.
Oh.
He says, not knowing you wrote this, and I shouldn't tell you this, but he says, but the author of this memo betrays a lack of knowledge of the world we live in over the past 25 years. He says, 1,000 PR men have broken their backs trying to make Richard Nixon appear warm and human, a man of heart. One thanks the Lord that this school of thought did not prevail in the advertising campaign of 1972. Second, we have to remember it's the liberal press. I know. It's the liberal press that says yes or no on the warmth and humanity bit. They did it for Roosevelt and JFK. They didn't do it for LBJ or Nixon. But if we want to get some grades for warmth and heart, I can tell you how to do it. First, have Nixon give an impassioned pro-civil rights speech, turning into Southern and Northern reaction, and then with tears streaming down his cheeks, saying, we shall overcome. But his point is, the way you're going to get it from them is a way you can't go.
That's a big deal with everything.
Yeah.
Although there's a lot more heart than we think.
Sure.
And well, chariots, of course, is another thing, right?
Okay, but here's the point. The president is not a heartless, cold son of a bitch, and public exposure to him and his performance in office has shown the nation that he's not. We knew that once the country saw him themselves without the filter of the media, we would accomplish that, and we did. And we should be satisfied with it. His point is, you got 61% of the vote. And that was a factor in it. Then he says there's a contradiction in the article handed me. The writer says Nixon should not do anything more himself to portray his heart than his top readers are incapable of doing. So how in the hell does he propose we accomplish the goal? My own view is the country ought to see more of the president in the second term. He ought to be out and around more socially in unstructured, spontaneous events. See more of the man. Only the president, not his flacks, can make appreciable changes in his image before the country. To hire a new army of PR types to devise ways to make it in Colorado. And he said, fourth, some of the image of this administration is not altogether inaccurate. Let's face it, Haldeman, Ehrlich, and Shultz, and Kissinger don't exactly come across as the lovable Lavender Hill mob. But so what? If we have a reputation for being a little tough and mean at times, maybe we deserve a portion of it. And he says, consider this. Post-election, 10 hours after it was over, the president called for the resignations of the entire government. He then proceeded to the mountains, while here in Washington, terrified bureaucrats are being carted off in tumbrils, and all that is absent is the sound of the guillotine. That is what we are doing. It has to be done. I concur with the necessity to do it. But damned if I can think of a way to make the process warm and human, to show heart, while chopping up this hostile bureaucracy, bombing the North Vietnamese into submission, and attempting to induce a sense of responsibility in the networks. Frankly, it doesn't bother me in the least that the president doesn't have Hubert Humphrey's reputation for heart, and apparently it doesn't bother the American people a great deal either. It would be nice to have heart, too, but we ain't going to convince the media to write about it, and we might just as well face up to that. Now, he's only partly right, but there's a point in it. No, he's partly right, but there's a point in his approach, which is that there are ways we can, we've made a lot of headway on the heart. More important than heart, actually. More important than heart. Boy, in reading these books, and it's kind of refreshing to look at how Neustadt and Rossiter and some of them, they're not our kind of people, but they've studied the presidency, the office, and they're trying to analyze the whole thing. what, where it comes out there is it ain't the heart that sells the guy, it's the strength. And it's the how a president's strength is viewed is what determines a people's view of the president and his position in history, not his heart. Mm-hmm. George Washington was not perceived as having any heart at all, and he didn't have any. He was a total cold-blooded son of a bitch, arrogant, unsufferable, insufferable. Lincoln, a myth was made up about having a great heart, which wasn't really true. But
he cut the bridge. He was one of the cruelest politicians.
That's right.
History.
But with the other Jefferson,
but he had a great sense of humor.
Jefferson was if you talk about political presidents, was the guy who totally politicized the presidency.
So did Jackson.
And Jackson repoliticized it the other way. And so you take the great presidents, they weren't perceived as heart type guys. Now Truman was not perceived as a guy with heart. He was perceived as a guy with great human characteristics, and he had that the common man.
Well, part of the reason
that common man
was all those things too, that he was a fair deal, he was a guy. He was for how things were gone or wrong.
But look at it. Teddy Roosevelt didn't have heart in the sense of caring about
cold doctor,
poor people and stuff like that. That's what heart's being defined as now, really. But warmth is a little different than heart. Teddy Roosevelt certainly had warmth.
Yeah.
And Franklin did in his own way, even though he was
charmed,
totally aristocratic and aloof.
Eisenhower basically had a...
Eisenhower's whole thing was that.
Eisenhower had an enormously captivating smile. But Eisenhower was one of the coldest, most aloof men in the world.
But it was never portrayed.
Nobody ever
came through this.
Good. Of course, that's the other thing. They don't get closer to me either. And thank God. I mean, you know, it's a, when people come in the cabin, close the sentence. There's not, no more. Oh, well. Maybe it's, we just...
No, I think...
I don't think it makes sense.
Part of what Pat says is right, part of what he says is wrong. And there are ways that...
No, I think maybe the less we have, as he calls it, PR, flags are out.
Well, I think so.
To be perfect. Now, that's right. Great deal.
We don't keep in mind the artificial.
So he's trying to get in touch about it. So, you know, we'll send them to get more out of it. Home for the incurables in case they can't get it all right.
There's some of it that's a tragedy. I mean, I was out at that home for the incurables, and you,
quite,
you know, that was something I'll never forget the rest of my life. And I've talked to people about it. I've talked to press people about it. Nobody pays any attention.
Right.
I've given a lot of the story, the way in which you are able to deal with those people. And that just goes right in. I can't bring myself to touch people like that. And you walk right up and that hand waving around and everything, and you grab a hold of it so that you can shake hands.
Yeah. What is that? That's
covered. Not the content, but the fact that... There's a pretty good twist in that one, which didn't get picked up, which is kind of interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised no sports writer picked up the fact that it was Kilmer that crapped all over you. And of all the Redskins, of course, he recanted. But
he wrote a letter. There was a letter.
He publicly corrected in the press, too. He said that he had been quoted out of context and hadn't meant that at all, and he was kidding about saying that Alan ought to call you. I think he was too. He was drunk. Alan said he had had four drinks.
Hope to God he doesn't drink before he next came.
But some of those things, I've told at least six or eight Saul Pet types and people like that. I just plow through that and I get emotional about it. Because I am. It is an emotion. That
and they don't. And they have pencils sort of dropping.
They don't pay any attention. They, you know, they won't so far. And that doesn't interest them.
I bet they do. We ought to use Rose. You know, we've
tried. You know, we tried to get Rose on TV.
Tried to come over here.
Tried to get her to do the song of that. Tried to get her to do the song of that.
What the hell is the trouble?
I don't know.
Something there. I don't know what it is.
It's funny. You gets annoyed that, you know, bothering her because she has so much work to do, and she made some crack to somebody here, which maybe this is what's bothering her, is that I took a week off, and some of the other people did, that she was here working. She was supposed to take off, too. And sure, she didn't, but exactly the reason that the rest of us has.
This week off stuff is a pure fetish of hers. She always says that everybody takes one of your handmaids, but Bob, for God's sakes, first, she doesn't do it again, then, but she, a month after the elections have come in, turn over the motion. And there was also nobody here. Thank you.
jump right into the fact that you would receive on a courtesy basis the heads of state and heads of government. We're here for that.
Okay.
And I mentioned a bipartisan leadership meeting on Friday. We'll talk about economic matters, wage and price control, and the right. I left it, you know.
We're just saying wage and price control.
Right.
Did you mention the reception I'm getting?
Yes, sir. Congress leaders will be there for that.
Leaders.
we've got to do is when there's something to be done, we've got to have the right guy to do it. And one guy has got to lead a charge on it, and he's got to stay with it, become the spokesman on that thing for a while. And then you shift to another guy.
Get
that another thing.
Development.
But there are only a few that are going to do us any good on that.
I think you're right.
Even
only a few are going to be heard.
Well, even if you don't really get hurt much.
Doesn't make much difference.
I mean, even now you get John Tower in leadership. John Tower will get up and whack for us. But will it do any good? Maybe. Not often. Scott, because he'll use a colorful phrase, will get hurt once in a while.
Griffin never,
because he won't use a colorful phrase. Don't go to the cameras. Doesn't understand what it's all about anyway. And isn't up for re-election for six more years, so he isn't going to care. But that is the single... I mean, we did get some stuff out of Congress, but in terms of effort invested, we got none.
So,
now the answer is to invest a better directed effort, not as much of it, but better aim, and get at least as much, maybe more out of it. And Chuck, I think, from what his conversation with me is, complete concurrence with that.
Why did McGregor take that kind of job he did?
Thank you. that you have all 4 years. Billy Graham has 3 of those 4 years, I guess. Come in second.
Well, I guess we can try to go on with this plan. Like I said, I think Colson could be awfully useful on this one, too, because of my...
Well, yeah. As it's,
Get his trip set up, and then if he's going to move out, I think it's best that he move out sooner rather than later, if you know what I mean.
Well,
he ought to break it off, so I'd have his trip go about the 1st of February.
He had it mine about the 15th of February.
Well,
and finish up the end. We can watch and see what... If the thing doesn't break, it's better to... We might as well get the use out of it. Because I'm getting Baruti zeroed in here, and although Chuck can help, and he's helped.
Baruti's already here
right now. Not totally. He's finishing up over there.
Can McGregor help us? When does Bush come aboard? Not till the 19th or
19th.
I hope I don't have to do anything more for the former national chairman, the president. Except that, I feel for him, though. I think he's just a rat himself. What do you think? He's just not a big man.
We got in that whole round of Christmas stuff, you know, he was in.
Well, I'll give him a hell of a send off. A
bunch of those events.
Do I receive the national committee's event this year?
We don't have it down.
There.
I think you probably, since
perhaps
you didn't meet with them down there.
Excellent idea. After they've elected their new chairman. Reception. Okay. But not before the inauguration. But when do they meet?
They meet the 19th.
Good God.
Sunday.
Sure.
After the church service and before the family reception.
I'd go the other way around. I'd have the family reception after the church service. You know how many members of the family? Why the hell would we let them come to the church? No. Why not?
Well, it fills up a lot of seats.
You're right. 200 or something.
You're right.
Family members?
I think it is.
I'm right. I don't know how it. Have the family, though, in the afternoon so that we don't have drinks. You know what I mean? I don't want to see them there drinking. A lot of them don't drink, too. It's another thing.
You want the family first and then the...
Yeah, I'd have them in the early afternoon.
Family at 2 o'clock.
And the national committee.
RNC at 5.
Yeah, the RNC at 5. Right. Or maybe 3 at that.
Those people probably going home.
I don't know. Not if they go to the inaugural balls. Not if they're invited to the White House for a reception. And if they're invited, what the hell are they going to do? I don't really care. This is the only person they can do it.
Make them at 4.
Second?
Huh? Make them at 4.
What's that?
Make them at 4 o'clock. Do the family at 2 and get them out at 3.
Fine.
Clean the place up and run the bachelor at 4.
And at 4 o'clock, we do the other. Excellent idea. We should do it. Let that out.
they get a certificate.
Then all the beauty of the certificate, we really discovered is kind of, it does not come from the necessity of composing the letter. And it means an enormous amount.
In some ways, it's better than a letter, because, you know, it's more frameable and all that, and you can make a thing out of it. And
being the letters, you imagine what the Kennedys would do with a little note to the Gilbert child.
That's, yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? We never put these things up. I pointed out something to Colson or something. I said, if you happen to know that, it's the first letter I wrote in January 1973. I wrote it here at the desk at 7:30 in the morning. I had seen the morning papers and I came along.
They put a point in the story that you're sending the
clip that I sent them about the letter. Convinced, though, that far better would be one thing. Some are you don't care about shaking hands with.
Well, they say they have anyway. They can, you know, symbolically they have.
Yeah.
Because they know other people did.
They saw the White
House. They were there with you.
Saw the president there at the White House.
They saw him.
What'll happen are certainly informal receiving nights. Like the diplomatic receptions, I'm going to make those evenings at the White House as we were describing. But then I'll just stand around. I know I might have to receive them.
I think you've got to receive
but, them. But on the others, on the other side, don't you agree?
We have them.
Don't do it. And I think on the church service now, instead of standing there in line with a dumb preacher every time, that we just pass that. And we'll walk in.
But you'd start bad and doing it.
Yes, I know it's better.
It saves the people from having to stand in line, too.
My church is that they can go ahead and hear them, and some may want to leave. Some may have had enough. We say, you're invited to have coffee and this, and we just walk right in, mingle around for a half hour, 15, 20 minutes or so, and then leave.
And work your way through slowly.
Right. Don't you agree? I think we can try those things, devices.
These meetings at the White House are for this kind of stuff, too, the advantage. You got a lot of pluses. One is the effort is a lot simpler. You don't have to make a toast.
That's right.
You don't have to get into recognition of individual people.
That's right.
All that kind of stuff.
That's right.
You can get a lot more people in, and they're all treated on an equal basis instead of before dinner and after.
I can suggest one thing at the evening at the White House, though. I don't care what kind of an outfit it is. Set it up so we go to an oblong basis rather than setting the stage at one end and everybody sitting back there.
Boy, I agree.
People in the back can't see a goddamn thing.
Of course, not if we could just, we've got those risers, if we could just somehow get have to use them.
You're talking to me at the same time.
That's a good idea.
But I don't think she'll agree.
It's just tragic not to use them because they have two advantages. One, the audience can see the show, which they can't otherwise. But the other one, which is even more important in a way, is the audience can see the rest of the audience. And that's a hell of a deal to them, too. And they can see you.
Yeah. It's marvelous, I do.
Which they can't. The
she don't even do it.
That one night we used it, it was sensational.
Surely.
Maybe she can. But,
anyway, the next best thing is to have people
that's right,
in the semicircle sort of thing and just say, well, it's big or something. Put it there anyway. Don't put it at the other end. I just don't want it that way. Put it the other.
So you can't do it for a dinner because of the reception in the East Room to begin with. That's where you get screwed up.
I see.
But for an evening at the White House, it's no problem.
Good.
You're set up just for that.
Good.
So it works fine. The other thing, the evening at the White House, is that it saves an enormous amount of money. Because those dinners cost $10,000.
Right.
I didn't really at the White House only cost about a couple $1,000. $1,000 or something.
Even with the orders and the drinks.
Yeah, they don't amount to that much. The dinner is just horrendous. $50 a head.
Is there anything to be said to, in order to get a larger group to do something in that damnable Kennedy Center? No. I don't like it.
Doing that at the inaugural, and that's going to cover most of these same people, I would say no. And that, when you get to the bicentennial in 76, I think you may want to do some things there. Sort of some of your farewell type stuff. Because you get a lot more people. I would now, I'd play at the White House.
Sure. And they are the dinners that the pain in the ass. getting in the little rooms after the dinners, where they're just small little, that's trying to get groups. There are great masses of people, and they all start surging around. And then an informal line forms. And so you just stand there and shake hands, and they come through.
Well, sort of start moving yourself. If you kind of move through the thing, if you can, so that you just sort of shaking hands along the way, and people that don't quite get to you, you just don't worry about it.
You pick through the list in advance and have a couple of your aides there, say, find three or four of these people and be sure I do shake their hand when they're here. You see what I mean? I never really know it worked. With regard to the diplomatic reception, incidentally, don't rush in on that. Let's do it a couple of months ago. They mean